Tobacco has been a very successful business, and still is, to be honest. But there is a growing recognition that it will not be in the future. Now, who knows for how long? Probably we are looking at something like 20 to 50 years. But regardless, the management recognized that tobacco is not the area of growth. So consequently, they started thinking as to how we can regain that growth. And, you know, there are a few avenues how you can think about this. One of them is entering effectively new product categories that will be growing in the future.
Hello, and welcome to the Global Venturing Review podcast. I'm Fernando Moncada, and we've got a really interesting one for you guys this week. So Be Tomorrow Ventures, or BTV for short, the venturing unit of British American Tobacco, is a CVC unlike the rest in the sense that while the typical aim of a corporate venturing unit is to complement and innovate on top of its parent company's business, BTV's main purpose is to help its tobacco-producing parent move away from its core product and into new categories that will actually create growth in the future. Lukasz Garbowski, investment director at BTV, joins the pod to talk about the unit's unique approach, how it thinks about the new product categories that can leverage BAT's existing strengths, the challenges involved in convincing mostly health-focused startups that they're a good fit, and the work the unit does not just in investing in startups, but even introducing non-portfolio companies to BAT through its labs program. Don't forget to like, share, and subscribe to GVR, and above all, enjoy the show. So it's great to see you, Lukasz, here in Monterey again. And if I'm not mistaken, I do believe the first time we actually met was here at this event last year.
That's true.
That's true. And luckily, but we've ran into each other, in fact, since then in multiple countries. So yes. It's good to be.
But the truth is, I think, Fernando, we are meeting more often outside London, even though we are both based there.
Exactly.
We need to change this.
Exactly. No, we seem to meet up across the Atlantic more times than we actually do in the city that we both live in.
Right, because then we met. It was Monterey last year. Then we met in Brazil.
That's right.
Not in London. Okay.
Or maybe at the symposium. Plan. Who knows? But
actually, true.
If not, then this year for sure. Okay. And so, following from that, I'm already quite familiar with Lukasz, but perhaps some of our listeners aren't. So who is Lukasz Garbowski and how did he get to BTV?
Yeah, sure. So investment director with Be Tomorrow Ventures, in short BTV, if we use it for the rest of the conversation. We are the corporate venture capital fund of British American Tobacco, or again, BAT, to make it shorter. I'm sure we are going to cover a little bit about the BTV. So on the personal side, I'm Polish. And like Polish. I grew up in Poland. You know, my family is in Poland, educated there, but left Poland almost 15 years ago for an MBA in the US. And then my career took me through different areas of so-called investments. So I did investment banking, M&A. I did private equity. I did corporate development, M&A. And most recently doing venture capital based in London. And you know, I mentioned I'm Polish, but also I got the British passport, so two passports.
There you go. So now
call me Sir Lukasz.
There you go. I just got married, so I can get a British passport if I wanted, but you know.
Well, you know what? Actually, the value I think of the British passport sort of is a bit more questionable these days. You know, I remember when I was growing up in Poland, like you aspired to have a Western passport. Mm. Now that I have it, I'm not really using it.
Yeah, there you go. I mean, not to get into a Brexit talk, but
yes. Okay, that was a diversion.
I agree. I have a Belgian passport, so I'm in a bit of a similar boat. Yeah, I'm a citizen of the world there, Luca. Mm.
Then you don't really need the British one.
well, and as I've told you before, I mean, I'm really kind of excited to speak to you because we've talked about this a bit before, but the way I look at BTV is almost like a case study in the pure potential of this whole thing, right? Of venture corporate capital, because, and tell me if you see it differently, but you know, most CVCs will innovate on top of or in parallel to their parents' core business, right? Yeah. So even if you look at oil and gas, those CVCs are still investing in energy. And you know, BTV in a way is kind of investing away from the core business. Do you see it as, you know, to what extent do you see that as your purpose as a unit?
So in a nutshell, that's the only purpose of our unit, I would say.
And this is a little bit of exaggeration, so I will elaborate on that. Would you mind, though, if I, like, perhaps just for the people who are not familiar with BTV, I would just throw in some key stats so that people have a sense of the BTV, and then I will come back to the question. So as I mentioned, BTV, fund of British American Tobacco, $200 million USD fund, investing globally, 4 years in existence. So still relatively new fund, I would say, compared to some of the veterans here. 22 investments to date and 3 exits. So just a few stats to put it in the perspective. So now to your question, which I actually find it, and you know, I'm totally with you, because that's what I actually found interesting about BTV in the first place. That if you look at your typical CVC, most of them are, as you said, helping the corporate to advance on the already existing product, right? I don't know, get ahead of the curve, attract innovation, attract talent, but it's still to make the existing current business better or sort of insure it against the future disruption. But it's all about the current business, right? Whereas indeed for us, it's very different. So if you think about this, you know, tobacco has been very successful business and still is, to be honest, but there is a growing recognition that it will not be in the future. Now, who knows for how long? Probably we are looking at something like 20 to 50 years. But regardless, the management recognized that tobacco is not the area of growth. So consequently, they started thinking as to how we can regain that growth. And, you know, there are a few avenues how you can think about this. One of them is entering effectively new product categories that will be growing in the future. So that's what BAT did. It was not a random choice. So BAT tried to find an area of growth that where BAT's capabilities could be leveraged. Right. So for example, we have very strong distribution across 150 markets, if I'm not mistaken. So the thinking was, can we enter some of the markets where we can leverage our distributions, but those markets are growing and they are prospective for the future. So that was the foundation for the creation of BTV. You know, the corporate venture capital, I think, is somehow, not the easy is a wrong word, is a somehow risk-averse way to test new areas, right? Because by definition, those are the smaller bets, so not huge money is on the line. And effectively, our corporate tasked us, can you please explore for us those new markets that we think might be of interest to be in the future? Could you make some initial bets? Could we learn whether our hypothesis is holding true? And then if so, then the corporate is going to gradually move more and more into that area. So BTV, we are trying to explore those new categories, right? And one of the focus areas for us is health and wellness. And to be more precise, we sort of zoomed in on the area that we call functional food, which is anything that you can, I guess, eat or drink that has some functional benefit to you, whether that benefit would be for energy or whether it will help you to focus throughout the day. So far, we have invested in 20 companies of that nature. But yes, the premise that you sort of stated, it would be a little bit of exaggeration, but our CVC is helping our parent diversify away from what's today the core business. And I find it quite unique.
No, I agree. And I mean, going through your portfolio, there are, you know, some portfolio companies that you can draw a bit of a line to. So I'm looking at, you know, Filto, for example, or Canvas, or to a lesser extent, perhaps, you know, Canopia. But like you said, you know, you guys are quite focused on health and well-being, functional foods. Why, you know, within all the potential kind of product lines that you can, you know, leverage your distribution network or BAT's distribution network to grow, why those? Is it kind of like, is there a bit of a contrast there between, you know, tobacco and then healthy stuff?
No. Well, I mean, I think that there definitely is. And to be honest, when we started BTV, that was one of the key challenges. How do you explain to the wellness-oriented startup that they should partner with tobacco company, right? You know, like I think that sort of initially it doesn't really gel well. So probably we will cover this in a second as to what we did, how to overcome this. Mm-hmm. But to your point, how we thought of the categories that we are pursuing, it does link quite well with tobacco. So historically, if you think about tobacco or a cigarette, because that's the product, 30 years ago, when there were no smoking restrictions, cigarette was your companion throughout the day. Mm-hmm. People would smoke in the morning to get a bit more energized. Mm-hmm. And then
with the coffee, right?
Together with coffee, right? Or then when they would get stressed, they would go for the cigarette break to sort of calm down a little bit. So if you think about this, cigarette was your companion throughout the day to help you with the different moods that you needed at mm-hmm. different points in the day. So that's also how our company developed the skill set. We call it consumer moments, how we can capture those consumer moments throughout the day, right? So now the thinking is, obviously, the industry has changed and it's way more regulated. And we feel like we lost those consumer moments because of the regulation, right? Mm. So you cannot smoke in the office, you cannot smoke in the restaurants, things like that. So the thinking here is, how could we regain those consumer moments, right? We know how to cater to the need of consumer moments. We had the product. Now the product is becoming difficult. Can we find a new product that we can leverage, one, right, our distribution, and two, our know-how of those consumer moments, just with a different product? So the categories of the functional food, what I mentioned, or the wellness in general, is what we think could be this opportunity to regain the lost consumer moments, right? The product would be different now. And, as you mentioned, we invested in, for example, energy chewing gums or caffeinated chocolates or recovery drink shots. So, it is still an exploration, but there is a link when it comes to the capabilities of the company that it had, the past product and evolution as to what we are trying to test if we can successfully develop for the future.
Mm-hmm. So in other words, things that you consume or most of the time ingest,
yes,
but that you do it in a habitual way.
Right. Exactly.
Right.
That's spot on. Some other commonalities would be things that are portable with you, cigarettes, mm-hmm. it's relatively small, right? You put it in your pocket or you put it in your purse. So we would be looking for the things that are of that size, mm-hmm. because again, that actually fits also with our distribution model. Things that you buy in points of sales where the cigarettes are displayed. So, if you think of traditionally where BAT has capabilities, is sort of the counter. So we are looking for the products that could be displayed over there that over time would replace cigarettes. So there are some commonalities, it's not any product, but as you said, the habitual part is very important part, right? Because cigarettes are habitual. We think we know how to address this or how to sort of operate in that space. So yes, so those new ventures that we are pursuing will be of the same nature, right, or at least we are hoping will be.
That's interesting. And tell me more about, because you kind of alluded to it, you're kind of a bit of an uphill battle to kind of, win credibility. Especially with the startups that you're investing in that are obviously health focused, right? That's why they exist.
Right.
So how do they feel about the tobacco company investing in them?
Yeah, good question. How would you feel? you are running, the wellness oriented startup and your own mission is about making people feel better, healthier lifestyle. And then you get those dudes from the tobacco CVC saying we should invest in you. That doesn't really come across that well. Without some explanation. Right. So when we started 4 years ago, I must admit, it was a little bit of a challenge to sort of gain traction when it comes to allowing startups to give us sit at the table. Ariel, today I was on the panel with Daniel from PepsiCo. He has a very different story, right? You mentioned PepsiCo and people line up. Mm-hmm. Right. So what we did over the 4 years were actions or initiatives. We need to get creative to actually change that perception. So one is explaining our story. So the story of BAT is
we are genuinely trying to transition away from cigarettes, right? Mm. Now, the area that BTV is investing is only one of the avenues, but we are also in, but we are also pursuing what we call reduced risk health products. Mm. So, for example, all the vaping devices, right? This is genuinely healthier than the cigarettes. So we are trying to, you know, we are making commitments when it comes to sort of decreasing our operations in tobacco or even sustainability targets. So there is a genuine story behind BAT walking the talk. Mm-hmm. Now, I understand that the, you know, that the past was a bit tricky, but, you know, it's sort of almost water under the bridge. We are where we are. And the company is making genuine efforts and commitments to the society, to the shareholders, that it will transition. And that's visible, right? You know, like, I don't think we could fake that story, because people will just call you up on your BS. So that's one, you know, a sort of explanation of our story. Then we partnered with you guys from GCV, right, to establish our credibility within the community. And I think that, you know, you've been guys great partners with allowing us to voice our story to the community. So, you know, thanks for that. But that's the second. That's the second thing that we did. We partner with scouting partners, and like, for example, Mach49, that helped us also to open doors. So, you know, sometimes when we try to approach the startup, it would be a no, but if our trusted scouting partner does this on our behalf, well, then the startup is at least willing to give us a chance to present our story. We created something that we called BTV Labs, and happy to elaborate on that.
That's definitely on the podcast,
but you know, it's effectively our sort of speed dating program to introduce startup to BAT, so that the startup can actually get a sense that we are serious about the whole transition. And then, last but not least, we tried also to pursue co-investments with other partners who are a bit more established in the space, and you know, that was the effort over the past 4 years. So now fast forward 4 years, we have, as I mentioned, 22, or we made 22 investments. Now it's getting way easier. Mm. You know, first of all, because all of those efforts are translating into positive reputation, right? I think that, you know, I was even surprised that these days we are getting even inbounds from the startups that would say, oh, look, I spoke to XYZ. And you know, they let us know that you are the fund to connect when it comes to investing in functional food. Mm. So I think that's working out. That's one. Secondly, we have the portfolio of the companies who can help us validate the story, right? You know, like, you don't only now have to believe what I say. You can actually speak with the portfolio companies, the founders, and they can actually tell you how it is that we are serious about the transformation. So now it's a little bit easier, right? But the beginnings were difficult.
In those beginning stages, you know, before you started building that momentum in terms of reputation and started getting that incoming, how did that, because in a way, obviously any time that, you know, two groups are coming together, there has to be a fit. And in your case, it seems like you almost have to like pitch each other, right? How does that kind of affect the actual negotiations in terms of the terms?
In terms of the terms, I would say not so much. You know, we still try to be thoughtful, strategic, but at the same time, financial investor. So I think that, you know, on the spectrum where we are, yes, we are strategic investors, but we would not compromise on the financial viability of the deal just to get the deal.
Right.
I think that, but actually it's interesting what you said, because you are right. Normally it's startups pitching to the corporate. In our case, it's startup pitching to the corporate, but equally we were pitching to the startup. And I think that what it forced us to do, it forced us to come up with some different so-called added value that we can bring beyond the check. Right. So for example, you know, like to make it a bit more tangible, when we are investing in this functional food space or wellness space, we always try to think whether we can help startup to scale up by leveraging BAT's resources. So we invested in the functional chewing gum company and we enabled them entering new geography. They were based in the UK and we helped them to enter Sweden. or we invested in caffeinated chocolates company. They are based in Canada, and we introduced them to our key accounts in Canada so that they can scale up and generate more revenue. So I think that without compromising on the core investment terms, I think that our background forced us to be a bit more thoughtful as to what we offer. We don't really offer a check, because if we were just to bring the checkbook, it would be difficult to compete with a bit more established players. So we figure out that we bring the checkbook and some so-called added value where we can, right? It's, right. It's also without over-promising that we can conquer the world with the startup. But where we can, we try to facilitate that the startup gets something more beyond money.
Right. No, yeah, and I suppose that's the kind of name of the game. You know, if you're a CVC, that's what people are.
But actually, interestingly, I find it, you know, like that's what I learned over the past few years, that you have CVCs, and yes, CVCs by definition should be strategic, but you have a spectrum of CVCs, right? You have some CVCs that are actually operating more as a financial VC, and they don't really bring that much of this sort of strategic benefit to the table, because they are effectively not pursuing that to such an extent as we would or some of the more strategically oriented funds. So I actually find it that there is also a gradient of where you stand on the strategic fit for the various CVCs.
For sure. And so that's on the startup side. And on the corporate side, have there ever been, like, you know, some investments that you had to do some extra convincing that maybe that's too far away from the core?
Interesting. Actually, yes. So, and I think that if I could think of, we invested in a company called Awake Chocolate, caffeinated chocolates. Now I talk about this because it sounds very sort of, you know, like our sort of business as usual. But at the beginning, quite a lot of discussions internally that suddenly you have tobacco company investing in chocolate, you know, how that would be perceived externally. Will it be used against us? Right? Because somehow chocolate, you can think of the connection with the younger audience, and suddenly, you know, there might be a clash. So to your point, yes, we actually had a few rounds of discussions internally just to get comfortable with investing in this sort of new space. So that would be one example. Another one I could think of that we did a little bit of the, for the lack of the better expression, internal gymnastics would be a company called Plato Science, which is effectively a neuromodulation company based in Denmark. You put a headset on your head, it sends electrical current from one end to another, and that stimulates your mind. Now, again, if you think about this, tobacco company investing in neuromodulation, that's quite, you know, sort of a big gap, right? Yeah, yeah. So again, you know, like even internally, before we invested in the company, there were conversations as to why we, I don't know, is it a little bit far-fetched, you know, like what can we bring to the table? And then again, I think that, you know, similarly, as I mentioned to you, when we approach the startup, on the very top level surface, it doesn't make sense. But once you start explaining and drilling as to what we are trying to achieve, the capabilities that we have in sort of in-house, we have, for example, very substantial scientific team, so literally scientists working for BAT, then this neuromodulation actually doesn't feel such a crazy idea as it is on the when you hear it first time. So yes, internal explanation, very critical, and to be honest, ongoing. This exercise, I don't think that it finishes.
Yeah, is it a bit kind of like, are the aerodynamics a bit better now than they were at the beginning?
Yes, because now we have the portfolio of companies, so we have tangible examples, right? You know, like people can try the product, people sort of got used to the narrative, as I mentioned, 20 investments, so this narrative has been repeated numerous times, now it actually feels a little bit more normal and not as shocking. So definitely, it's getting better. But not to say that it's easy, right? Mm-hmm. You know, I guess it's any corporate, from what I'm hearing from my colleagues in CVCs, there is always corporate struggle, mm-hmm. because you would have different opinions, different views.
In terms of like getting sponsors on board.
Sponsors, sign off, everybody has a view, you know, like this startup, does it fit or not? Do we need it? I think that in our case, everything is a bit more difficult because of the nature of or the background of our historical product.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. And you mentioned, remind me again, what the size of your fund.
So 200 million USD or 150 million pounds.
And how's that structured? Are you guys on balance sheet or is it?
So we are part of BAT, right. So we are not off balance sheet, yeah. Which I actually always find it confusing because off with two F mm-hmm. or one F makes a difference. So anyhow, we are on the balance sheet of BAT. So we are part of the organization. Having said that, I think that when BAT decided to create BTV, there was a conscious effort and still is to keep us fairly independent because mm-hmm. there is a recognition that if we were to apply the typical corporate, and we are FTSE 10 company, so we have a lot of processes. If we would apply those to the VC world, it would not work, right? Mm-hmm. Like, you know, we would not really be able to execute deals fast enough to be competitive. So there is a conscious effort to try to keep BTV as independent as you can in the corporate setting. You mm-hmm. know, there are still some requirements that we have to go through, but I think that the corporate has given us a little bit of the slack.
Which is great. Yeah, it's a good problem to have, right?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. And, you know, and even with that slack, I think, but this is now not really BTV related, for any of the CVCs that are on the balance sheet of the corporate, I think it's still challenging, even, you know, if you are given some slack, I think it's still challenging to compete on the market with the off, with 2F, balance sheet, with the off balance sheet CVCs or with the financial investors, right? Mm-hmm. You know, financial investor, if they want, they can pretty much decide about the investment in, you know, 3-4 weeks.
Yeah.
I think for us, quite challenging, right? You know, the fastest we've been has been like 6 weeks, which, you know, is still good for the corporate, but yeah.
Yeah, I guess there's more boxes to take, a few more of them.
Yeah. The governance, right? Yeah. Like, you know, even simple stuff, getting people in a room to make a decision, you know, like right. people are traveling, people
getting
are busy.
Getting them on a Zoom call, right?
Yeah. You know, like you actually plan that well in advance because otherwise, mm-hmm. you know, aligning calendars is a challenge on its own, as simple as it sounds, right? Mm-hmm. But I guess this is the reality of the, I'm guessing, any corporate VC.
I would imagine so. Yeah. You mentioned this a bit earlier, but talk to me a bit more about BTV Labs. Mm. Like, what are they exactly? And am I right? You're kind of taking care of the ESG lab, right?
Yes. So Labs, it started as a speed dating idea between startup and BAT. And the background for that is that as we talked a few minutes ago, we struggled to get leads. So we had to find ways to explain to startups our story. Mm-hmm. So we created those labs. It's structured as a few weeks program, and it's not a full time. It's like, you know, it takes, 2-3 hours per week from the startup. So we are not really trying to overload them so that they can focus on their business. But effectively, it's an introduction program between the startup and BAT. So we as BTV, we would facilitate that, hey, Startup X, you should talk to person A or person B within the BAT organization so that you can learn about us. Mm-hmm. And if we facilitate enough of those introductions, it achieves a few things. One, the startup learns about our broader picture and the story. So many times we actually win startups over there because they learn that it's credible. Secondly, they get to know people and they realize that actually BAT can be helpful, right? That there is a lot of knowledge. If I, for example, introduce a startup to the head of supply chain, that individual is a very experienced individual. So just having a conversation with that individual, startup can benefit from, because that individual can, you know, throw in ideas and suggest certain things that otherwise the startup would not know. So there is some actually benefit for those startups to have those conversations. Mm-hmm. Thirdly, they get to know people. And as in any business,
you know, it's people driven, right? You know, so you get to know people and you start to think of the organization as a sum of individuals rather than some cold British American Tobacco BAT name, right? That actually doesn't really mean much to you. And thirdly, it's an opportunity to evaluate from both sides whether there is a fit, right? Mm-hmm. You know, so as a startup, you are pursuing strategic partnership because you hope to get something more than the check, mm-hmm. right? So as opposed to us just promising that, we proactively sit with the startup and we tell them, look, if you would accept our investment, we can do XYZ with you. Is it of interest? So there are a few benefits for the startup. There are equally benefits for BAT because it, you know, in practice, it serves as a product / technology due diligence process, right? Mm-hmm. Equally, if we put all those BAT individuals to talk to the startup, we later get feedback as an investment team, you know, does the technology really sort of stack up and sort of, you know, is it credible? So I think that it's like also it can help with the due diligence process. So that's how it works. Mm-hmm. You know, few meetings effectively over the course of, let's say, 4 to 6 weeks where both parties can decide, does it make sense? Should we continue? We as BTV, we facilitate those introductions because, you know, we have contacts within BAT. We know who to put or who is best positioned to talk to the startup. So we started that labs, I think 3 years ago. And it actually evolved quite nicely. So now we have something that we called Consumer Delight Lab, which is the effectively the labs program focused on all those functional food companies. We have, as you mentioned, ESG Lab that is targeted at sustainability and achieving the ESG goals. And if I recall correctly, we are now in the fifth cohort of that lab. So, you know, so I think that now we actually have almost an alumni program. Mm-hmm. And we are about to launch what we call DG Lab. So the lab that would be focused on the digital aspects of how to run the company more efficiently. And sometime in the future, we might launch science/futures lab, which would be a little bit more forward thinking. What I mentioned, this neurostimulation, mm-hmm. more of that. But this is sort of on the roadmap.
How do you assess, well, first of all, what does success look like for the labs? And how do you assess that? Is there like a conversion rate that you kind of look at from going from the labs to the kind of portfolio type?
Right.
Of
thing? So actually, a very good question. The objective, we are not really doing labs purely for investment purposes. So actually, we would be equally happy if we facilitate introduction between the BAT and the startup, and there is no investment, but there is some cooperation between the two parties, right? That cooperation can be commercial contract, can be some joint development plan, some pilot. So I think we are doing this in principle to establish ourselves as a helpful partner to bring innovation to BAT and to help us communicate BAT story to the startup community, right? Now, if at the end of the journey, there is an opportunity for an investment because the two parties think that, you know, it's a match made in heaven, we as BTV, we can step in to provide the capital for the expansion and the further cooperation. But, you know, many times the objective on its own is that we are not really screening for startups for any of the labs as to whether it's a good investment opportunity. It might be actually not an investment opportunity, but still interesting value proposition to the corporate because it brings innovation, it kind of shows new ways of working. It, you know, it's also okay. So, you know, if I think of that from the Consumer Delight Lab, probably around 20 to 30% ended up as an investment opportunities. Mm. From the ESG Lab, we are only now starting investments. And, you know, I mentioned to you that we are in cohort 5. So we went through the 5, you know, like almost runs of the lab without the investment. It's only now that we will be making some investments because the cooperation between the startup and BAT is so promising. So yeah, so, you know, so even from those stats, it's not only about the investments.
It's interesting. So that's from labs to portfolio, but what about down the line from portfolio to BAT? What's the kind of relationship between CVC and M&A for you guys?
Actually, to answer another good question, we have yet to experience that
because we have not really, you know, there was no M&A activity yet. But joking aside, I think that when we are looking at this space of wellness, functional food, naturally, and we're actually very transparent with the portfolio companies or even at the due diligence stage, that naturally all of those companies are considered to some extent as a feeder into potential M&A pipeline.
Right.
Now, you know, it's far removed in time because, you know, those startups, who knows how they will evolve. There needs to be validation that there is a fit and that there also needs to be a validation that we as a corporate can help them scale. So it's not like by no means it's a promise M&A. But there is an M&A angle that if all goes well, there is an M&A or exit opportunity for the startup that BAT might be an acquirer.
Mm-hmm.
So this is the thinking. Now, as I said, we invested in probably out of the 20 portfolio companies, 10 of those are in this wellness functional food space. But we are still about to actually see that M&A process materializing, mm-hmm. So we do have some what I would call superstars that we really like in our portfolio that are performing well, and mm-hmm. we think there is a match, but we haven't really done any of those M&As. But I wouldn't really exclude this over the next, I don't know, plus minus 2-3 years. I think that something might happen.
And when you have those initial talks with a startup, does that make them nervous at all? That, like, you know, it will, to the extent, especially if that, you know, to the extent that translates over into the terms as well.
Yeah, so that's very fair, because it actually doesn't really make them nervous. And to be honest, I find that they like it as long as it doesn't really limit too much
right. Of
the sort of potential exit options. And I think that, to be honest, we are also trying to be quite conscious as an investor not to constrain the startup too much. So I think that, you know, the way I see our role as an investor, we are wearing like almost two hats, right? One is from the strategic angle, give BAT an opportunity to capitalize on that relationship,
mm-hmm.
right? So, you know, BAT would have information rights. We would have mostly observer seats. We don't really take the board seats. So BAT would almost have a sort of first look, but we are, as I mentioned earlier, we are trying also to be a thoughtful financial investor.
Mm.
So it's, you know, the way I see our role is to almost negotiate. So BTV will be negotiating with both startup and BAT so that BAT doesn't ask for too restrictive rights. You know?
Right.
So for example, we are trying to shy away from any of the rights of first refusal because we find them too punitive, right? You know, perhaps there is a softer version of this that you might ask for the right of the first offer. That is right. A little bit of the compromise. But I'm trying to make sure, as well as my colleagues in BTV, that the startup is best positioned to be successful with or without BAT.
Right.
And I think that this part without BAT is equally important. And, you know, we need to explain this to the organization that this cooperation is not only for the benefit of BAT, right? BAT might have the first optionality, but if for whatever reason the corporate decides not to pursue this, we don't want startup to be so constrained that they cannot really pursue anything else. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. And I suppose maybe it might be a bit of a red flag if you think that, you know, you're so crucial to a startup that it wouldn't survive without you.
Right, exactly. Right. Yeah. You know, I think that's another thing. And I'm always trying to advise the startups because it's very easy at the beginning to get easily excited. Oh, you know, this corporate is going to help me with X, Y, and Z. And suddenly, you know, the next thing you know is that all your eggs are in one basket because you are mm-hmm. pursuing all those different avenues with the corporate. Now, it's all great when things are going well.
Yeah.
Now, imagine that for whatever reason, overnight things change and the startup says, oh, sorry, I need to park those or I cannot really pursue those anymore. Exactly to your point. Suddenly, startup is left without the business, mm-hmm. right? So I think that it all needs to be balanced, like, you know, balance in terms of the terms we are requiring, balance in terms of what the startup is doing with the corporate. Like, I guess
as in life, right? You know, balance is the key word, and the extremes are never too good.
Yeah. And are there any kind of verticals that you're looking at right now, either existing ones that you're already focused on that you're particularly excited about, or maybe ones that you're kind of looking at around the corner?
Mm. So I mentioned to you we are Fund 1, but Fund 1 is almost sort of committed, mm-hmm. or we are also ring-fencing a portion of Fund 1 for the follow-on investments. Mm-hmm. So we are now thinking Fund 2, a little mm-hmm. bit bigger. And now we are also rethinking, now having the learnings of the past 4 years, we are rethinking as to what will be the focus of the Fund 2. So we are going to focus on the three areas. You will see more of this wellness and functional food. We are going to play actively in that space. We might be pursuing perhaps a little bit more later stage investments. So far we have invested in anything from seed to like series B, even C, but mm-hmm. predominantly it was between seed and series A. We might mature a little bit more towards series B and the likes, but that would be one of the focus areas. The new one that I mentioned when discussing labs would be sustainability. Mm-hmm. You can expect to see quite a few investments in the sustainability space. And then, as I mentioned, this digital transformation of the company, so whether it's supply chain, whether it's marketing capabilities, we will also try to look into that. But the focus will be wellness and sustainability.
Well, for the benefit of any founders in those areas that might be listening to this, you know, one, what's the best way to get in touch with you? And what do you want to hear from them in a pitch?
Right. The best way to get in touch. All the contact details are on the website. LinkedIn, very sort of common tool. And, you know, happy, I don't know, as a follow-up to that event, you know, to kind of put the contact details live with you guys. But there are a few avenues, not that difficult to get in touch these days. In a pitch, it's interesting. Like, I actually find it, but this is my personal preference, so now it's a little bit subjective. I find it the simpler, the better.
Mm.
Many times what I find out that the startup founders, especially in the technology space, I guess with the food products, it's easier to explain. Mm. But what I found in the technology space is that the startup is doing this on the daily basis so much that it's all clear to them. But it's actually difficult for the other person who is hearing this for the first time to actually understand what they do, especially if they start using buzzwords, you know, yeah. Like ML, AI, and, you know, like, and then
putting
you think,
a bunch of like letters together. And
right. Yeah. And then you actually think, okay, so what actually does the startup do? So I think that it's important that the startup can explain the story in a very simple manner. Like almost speaking to idiots. Not that the people on the other side are idiots, but you know, like if you cannot explain this to your grandmother or parents, well, then probably, you know, you are not really doing a good job. That's one. And two, what I found in the pitch decks is that there is lack of balance. So normally you would expect, you know, when you invest in the startup, you don't invest only in technology, you don't invest only in the team, you don't invest like, you know, in any of the only buckets, right? You want to have all the buckets, so, you know, product, team, traction. You want all of that to be evidenced and effectively balanced, right? Mm. You know, that's what you are sort of supporting. And what I saw in the pitch decks is that people would naturally skew towards one area and allocate disproportionate amount of time or slides to one area and ignore the others. And mm-hmm. also with the technology, you would have a lot of the about how the technology works, but then you start questioning on the business plan, and you know, like you almost discover there is no business plan.
We'll get a CFO, don't worry about it.
Oh, actually, so the answers like that, right? You know, like, or the numbers like don't even, you know, sort of tie. So, you know, that would be one. Or what I've seen sometimes on the other side, especially if the startup would be founded by a bit more established individuals, they would try to overplay the credentials of the team. And, you know, right. It's very important because you are ultimately backing the team, but, you know, it needs to have some merit. I understand that the startup most likely will pivot a few times. So, you know, that's why the team is important. But I think that in the pitch decks, simplicity to me would be key. And probably last but not least,
I think that, you know, anywhere between 8 to 10 slides or pages, it's enough. Like, you know, I don't think that I'm expecting a pitch deck of 50 pages because, to be honest, I'm actually probably not really going to read it that well, at least in the first instance, right? I think that you summarize your proposition, which also should help the startups in a relatively concise manner. And then if there is an interest, yes, then we will go into details. But at the beginning, sending 50 pages pitch deck is not really going to do you any service.
Yeah, and you kind of mentioned a few there, but are there any, you know, without just inverting the stuff that you want to hear, are there any kind of other red flags or pitfalls that you would advise they avoid?
No, I think what I mentioned, I mean, using buzzwords, but that's what we, you know, that's what we covered. Not being able to explain in simple terms. No, I think that we covered this. You know, like, my background is finance, so I guess my personal, not preference, but I would be always more sensitive, you know, that the numbers are presented well and they make sense, and then you don't really have obvious mistakes that stand out from the page. But like, okay, but this one is like more, I guess, because of my background.
Like a team of two coming in and saying we're valued at £1.3 billion.
Right, you know, the valuation expectations. Actually, I think that's the interesting one, because I thought of the pitch. But when you look at the expectations, I actually think that the smart startups would be, again, balanced in what they ask. I think, you know, like, I understand that, or me as an investor, I understand that it has to make sense to the startup, right? So, for example, ideally, each round is an increase over the previous round, because, you know, that shows, that validates effectively the proposition, you know. So I kind of get it. And if I am an investor, it's also in my interest that the value of my portfolio is accelerating. But at the same time, I find it always weird that the startups would sometimes ask, as you are saying, for the crazy increase in the valuation, not only because it's not justified by the numbers, but they are actually doing the service to themselves, because there is a next round to come after this one. Yeah. And guess what? You actually need to outperform yourself again, you know. So how much longer, you know, like, effectively people are putting pressure, unnecessary pressure on themselves, as opposed to give themselves a little bit of debriefing space and thinking a bit more, not even long-term, mid-term, you know, like, that there is two or three more runs to come as opposed to only one current run. So actually, valuation, as you mentioned, good idea, and very current topic, right? Especially in this
right now, yeah,
macroeconomic climate that we are entering, you know, there is an expectation that the valuations will get normalized. And I think that's fair, because they have been a little bit crazy over the past years.
They've come down a lot since 2021. And certainly, I mean, we're speaking on right now on March 16th, certainly over the past week, they've become even more normalized, as it were.
Yes. I think that the events of the weekend, yes, will contribute to the normalization of terms.
I would imagine so. Yeah. And on the corporate side, what would you say, not necessarily just BAT, but, you know, widely, that, you know, corporates can do more of or do a better job of to help their CVCs and the wider
ecosystem? And not necessarily even CVCs, because I see the CVC only as a vehicle to what the corporate wants to achieve. Right. But I think that, you know, few areas. I think that the first of all, corporates can be faster. It's not a rocket science or revolutionary idea, but, you know, as I mentioned, planning a meeting, right, sometimes can take weeks ahead. We need to plan, whereas if the sort of decision making process can be accelerated, I think that would, you know, that would significantly help startups. Because those startups, as you know, they are operating with the very limited runway, right? Mm-hmm. You know, like, many times it's 9 to 12 months. If you are lucky, you have 18, you know, so they cannot really wait 2 months for the decision of 3 months, you know, like, it actually makes a difference to them. Plus, it also creates a little bit of the disconnect if the startup can decide in the day, right? You know, like, right. I come back to startup and the next day I have an answer, and then I say, okay, thank you for your answer. Now I would, you know, I'm going to come back to you in 4 weeks, right? Yeah. You know, because... So I think that, you know, simple stuff, a little bit of more agility and speed. I think that second one, and I would encourage startups to probe CVCs on that, as we mentioned earlier, not all CVCs are equal when it comes to what they can deliver beyond the check size. And some of them are proactively choosing to act more as a financial investor. So they have capabilities, but they do not activate those capabilities. Some of them are over-promising, right? It's always easy in the competitive process that you want to win the deal, so you would over-promise what you can deliver. So I think that it's, my recommendation would be to the startups to be very thoughtful about checking what they hear from the corporate, and the corporate not to effectively be transparent to what it can and what it cannot deliver to the startup beyond the check size. I think that would be probably the two most probing sort of areas. The last one I could think of is that the VC is a long-term game, right? Like ultimately the sort of, what's the average time to liquidation? 5 to 7 years for the startup. So the corporate needs to realize this and be patient. I think that sometimes, in the corporate, people rotate between different roles and they stay for 2-3 years in the position and then they move on, right? Mm-hmm. Which means that they have those 2 or 3 years to show some results of their work so that they can move on and get the new role. And the startup timeline doesn't really fit into that profile.
Yeah, it's a bit longer than that, yeah.
Right? You need 5 years, you need 7 years. So sometimes, there is lack of patience from the corporate that the startup is of strategic value, will deliver on those so-called strategic objectives. Just give it time, right? It will not happen in 2 or 3 years because, the startup is a startup. So patience, probably the last one, I would say.
Fair enough. And following from that, maybe we'll wrap it up on a bit of an open-ended one. What comes next for BTV? You mentioned potentially Fund 2 on the horizon. Where would you want to be in 1 or 2 years?
The glory. Okay? Yeah. The glory is coming. In the sort of short term, hopefully Fund 2, you can expect more from BTV in this wellness functional food space. Not only because Fund 2 will be bigger, which will allow us to do more transactions, but I think now that we establish ourselves as one of the go-to funds in that space, I think we will have access to more prominent deals. So I think that this is one expectation and ambition. The second one is what we covered around sustainability. I really hope that our ESG lab, now that it's fully operational, will translate into more investments in that space. And I think that especially because BAT has just appointed its first chief sustainability officer. So now we have a senior internal sponsor to champion those investments. So that's it. And then sort of a little bit with the funny note, you can expect to see BTV where GCV is. So I think that you guys have been very good partner for us, and again, thanks for that, for establishing our credibility. We will continue doing that with you, right? Because that helps us to spread the word. So any events like the summit or symposium in London, we plan on attending and be visible there and work with you on spreading the word.
We're there. So anyone listening who wants to talk to BTV, go to the symposium in London.
Yes, please. No, guys, we will be there in force. I think it's like 5+ people coming. So you will have a lot of BTV there.
There you go. And Lucas, a pleasure as always. Like we were talking about, off camera, it's always good to do these things
in person, actually.
In person,
right?
Exactly. So, thanks for sparing, your time today, and hopefully I'll see you in London.
Yes, and not only on the symposium, we actually need to plan like a coffee.
There you
go. Off-cycle.
Off-site, yeah, exactly. There you go.
Thanks, Fernando.
Absolutely. Take care.
That is it from us this week. Be sure to follow along for more upcoming episodes. We've got some great guests lined up across a number of industries, so don't miss out and hit that subscribe button. Listen along on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, SoundCloud, or on your listening platform of choice. I have been Fernando Moncada. Our sound engineer is Mark Chatterley from In-Ear Production, whose great work you can check out at inearproduction.com. And our music is by Kevin MacLeod and a Creative Commons license. We'll be back again soon, as always. Until then, take care.